Welcome to the CCA edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the cholangiocarcinoma community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Rehem Abdulwahab, Chief Scientific Officer and Director of Research of the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. Originally from Egypt, she graduated from Asyut University Faculty of Medicine in 2006. Based in Houston, Texas, Dr. Abdulwahab did a five-year research fellowship at MD Anderson and is currently on the executive committee of the International Cholangiocarcinoma Research Network. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Abdulwahab.
Thanks, Larry.
Tell us a bit about yourself, how you became an oncologist, and why cholangiocarcinoma interests you.
So actually, my passion since I was like I grew up in like in scientific family. So my dad was a professor in physics. My mom was like a teacher of physics. So we are like a science family. So my passion was to be a scientist. And when I was 10 years old, my dad passed away, and he passed away with a liver disease. So I had the passion at that time to be a medical doctor and to focus my research and my work on the liver disease. And then once I joined the medical school, I completed my medical school at 2006, and I joined the clinical oncology department and finished my residency and my fellowship. And because I wanted to expand the opportunity to reach out to more high volume institutions which have a lot of resources. So I applied for the to complete my PhD. I applied for the, it's like the Egyptian higher education scholarship, and I got it. And I had the opportunity to come to and join MD Anderson Cancer Center at Houston, Texas to complete my PhD. And my research focus at that time was on hepatocellular carcinoma. And because this is my main interest, to be focused on hepatobiliary, I expanded my research during this time to also pancreatic and cholangiocarcinoma and gallbladder. And this is how I joined or I came to U.S.
I understand that bile duct cancer is one of the fastest growing cancers in the United States today, even as far more common cancers seem to be declining in prevalence, such as lung cancer. Why do you think this is happening?
Actually, there's a lot of risk factors for cholangiocarcinoma. And although that one of the more risk factor which is known for cholangiocarcinoma is liver fluke, and this is not in US, this is actually based in Asia. This is why you find like a lot of cases in Asia. But there is a lot of research correlating the association between cholangio and hepatitis, like hepatitis B and C, and also with metabolic syndrome. So which actually a triad of diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. So obesity or like metabolic syndrome in general plus hepatitis may play an important role.
Obesity is a risk factor then for cholangiocarcinoma?
It's not. So there is like a lot of research now on the metabolic syndrome and how metabolic syndrome is a disease which patient will have the triad of obesity, diabetes, and hypertension and high cholesterol. So this metabolic syndrome induce some inflammation in the body, which can increase the risk of cancer. A lot of ongoing research studying the correlation between metabolic syndrome and different type of cancer, including the cholangio, but still there is like some debates.
Between 8,000 and 10,000 cases of cholangiocarcinoma reported each year in the United States, but understand that it's also an issue of coding, that because of some new codes introduced, it will now be easier to actually diagnose and classify the disease.
Yeah, because we had actually an issue with the coding. The cholangiocarcinoma anatomically includes three types. And this is actually depending on where the tumor originated. Anatomically, if the tumor originated inside the liver, in the bile duct, which is inside the liver, this is called intrahepatic cholangio. And then if it's originated outside the liver, there are two types. There are perihilar and there is a distal cholangio. And this is actually depending on the location outside. Doctors can identify which type. The issue that the first thing that perihilar cholangio sometimes was coded as a part of intrahepatic, sometimes it was coded as a part of the extrahepatic. The second thing that there is also issue in the reporting, sometimes in the physician notes, how we can report. Sometimes it's not reported everywhere. I think now with the new coding, which is launch it, and hopefully we will start, everyone will start using this. We have a specific code for each anatomical subtype. So definitely this will make our work much more easier, because we really can understand what is the natural history of each type. Because definitely although it's so far the treatment is the same, but in clinical practice, we know that there is a difference in the disease progression, and there is a difference in the response to treatment among different types.
I see. You spoke about geographic and disease risk factors such as diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. But how much of cholangiocarcinoma is genetic?
There is no strong association or like a study which shows that family associated, like that cholangio is running in family. There is a current work that's done by a couple of researchers looking for patients, the cholangiocarcinoma patients who have a family history, what exactly genes they have. There is a huge GWAS study, which is done by, it's done not only in US, there is like a 30 institution participating in this study from US, from Europe, and from Africa. And patients are actually donating some blood samples and tissue, plus they donate their clinical data. So I think once we have some results from this study, this will be a great resource to look exactly if there is a significant family history or a genetic predisposition for cholangiocarcinoma.
So in that case, they could be screened possibly earlier before it advances to a later stage.
Actually, yeah, you touched on something which is actually we're discussing this nowadays, that one of the main issues in cholangio is that you don't have, most of the patients presented in an advanced stage because you don't have a screening program. It's not like a breast or colon or prostate where we have established screening program. We are discussing now with a couple of researchers from John Hopkins, Mayo Clinic, MD Anderson and other institutions, what exactly we need to do, and if there is any possibility to establish maybe a blood marker, discover a blood marker or a tissue marker, or what screening guidelines that we need to put for those patients who have a cholangio, and also who is a patient at high risk. So if you have a hepatitis, should you be screened for cholangio, patient who have hepatitis, and be screened for hepatocellular carcinoma? What exactly we can do to build a screening guidelines program?
At this point, what is the 5-year survival rate for patients with cholangiocarcinoma?
It's less than 1 year, and this is depend on the if they are presented at an advanced stage or if they will undergo for surgery. But unfortunately, more than 70% of patients presented at an advanced stage, like a stage 4, so the disease will be expanding outside the liver. So it's with the standard first-line therapy, GEMCIS, we are speaking about less than 1 year, but definitely with the new treatment that have been approved recently, so definitely there will be a changes in the survival.
Well, actually, thank you, because I wanted to ask you exactly about that. Since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, where everybody has been working remotely, et cetera, it seems like you've been busy. I understand that the FDA has approved 3 treatments for cholangiocarcinoma during this time.
Yeah.
Can you talk about them, please?
Yeah, actually, the last 2 years was, although with the pandemic, it was good for the cholangiocarcinoma community. We have 3 drugs got approval. Two of these drugs, the first drug approved was in 2020, and this is pimigatinib, or it's called Pemazyre, and this is an FGFR inhibitor. So patients who have a cholangiocarcinoma and molecular testing on their tissue, if they have FGFR inhibitor, they can be treated with this drug. So if they have FGFR mutations, they can be treated with this drug. And then in the 2021, we had 2 drugs have been approved. One of them was FGFR inhibitor, which is infigratinib. And the other one was IDH inhibitor, which is another mutation also common in cholangio. And this is ivosidenib.
And I understand that you're talking a lot now about this TOPAZ study on immunotherapy. Can you give us an overview of that, please?
This is a trial that was done by AstraZeneca, and they released the first announcement on this on the last GI ASCO, so it's less than a month ago. This is actually the first study which focused on evaluating the immune therapy in cholangiocarcinoma patients. And we know that cholangiocarcinoma is a cold tumor. We call this as a cold tumor, which means that it's not responding to immune therapy easily. Most of the trial which investigated a single agent immune therapy for cholangio didn't show good response. So the good thing in this trial that they actually combine this drug with the standard chemo, which is GemCis, and they compared patients who received GemCis plus the immune therapy versus GemCis alone, and they also keep follow up them up to 2 years. So I think this is a good start. It show a good results, and we have been discussing with the team who have been participated in this trial, and they are still looking for doing some maybe a subgroup analysis to identify exactly if there is any difference in response based on the anatomical location. Maybe intrahepatic is more. Also, this study included around 55% of patients were from Asia. So we need also to know if there was any difference in the response among Asian versus patients who have been enrolled from US or from Europe. So a lot of things still need to be done, but definitely this is a good start and give us a hope that maybe immune therapy will work for cholangio.
Now, from what I was reading, Thailand has the world's highest incidence of cholangiocarcinoma. Something like 65 per 100,000 inhabitants are affected by this disease. And as you mentioned, a lot of this is related to the liver fluke because of eating fish that's not been cooked long enough. How much education is there in Thailand and in Southeast Asia about the risk of this disease?
There is a lot of efforts done by researchers who are there, and we are actually through the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. We have like some collaborator from Asia. We are working with them. We built one program under the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation, and this is called the International Cholangiocarcinoma Research Network. And actually, the main idea started back in 2015, and this was like a discussion between only two investigators. And now we have more than 200 members, and we have like 50% from institutions, participating institutions are from US, but the 50% actually from Asia. We have like a couple from Europe. So we definitely working with them on awareness and like creating some infographics that in a patient-friendly language that help patient understand what is the drop, what is the hazards of having liver fluke infection, how this affect their health, and even how this may affect the economics of the country. So we have been discussing this a lot internally.
This is very, very interesting. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Dr. Abdelwahab, thank you very much for speaking with us. This is Larry Luxner, Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.